listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams so you can easily get to a healthy weight and get on with your life. That is what it is all about. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. So today I have a special guest. As you know, I don't usually have guests, but I have the most special guest today, Kelly Gunter. Kelly is an internationally acclaimed, inspiring speaker, life coach, Amazon best-selling author of the compelling memoir, You Have Such a Pretty Face. She is a survivor and an emotional warrior. As Kelly puts it, her painful journey to find peace and self-worth began with a 243-pound weight loss, including many dark moments of despair that eventually brought her to her knees. But she says, when the world says give up, hope whispers, try it one more time. That is her philosophy of life, and it has carried her far. Kelly's story of survival has been featured internationally, including the Daily Mail TV show, Recovery Today magazine, the Australian National News. She was also on the cover of People magazine in South Africa. How cool is that? And she is the co-creator with me of the Binge Free Babes program. She is also the author of the popular blog Ramblings from the Homecoming Queen of Crazy Town. And she is currently finishing her second memoir, The Homecoming Queen of Crazy Town. Welcome. Welcome, Kelly.
Hi, thanks. I'm happy to be here again.
The first time you were here, you were actually in the studio back in the days when we were in studios, which hopefully those days are coming back. But we didn't have the technology to do this. So I'm so glad that we do now and that we could be here together. So for those people who are listening, who are not familiar with your story, you had this 243-pound weight loss. You thought that would bring you happiness, and you were wrong. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I'd weighed almost 400 pounds for close to two decades. And, I constantly just would lay in bed at night dreaming, oh, if I could just lose the weight, I would be happy and I could do things. I could be a better mom. I could do all of the things I wish I wanted to do. I could wear the clothes I want to wear. I just felt like my life was stuck and that there was no moving forward. And so eventually I had weight loss surgery and I lost the 243 pounds. And once I lost it, I was determined I would never gain that weight back. And that was something that I stuck to. I mean, it's been 19 years now. I haven't gained any weight back. But what I didn't do was heal the trauma that caused me to use food as comfort in the first place. And something that is very, very common that a lot of weight loss surgery patients don't know is there is a real risk and danger of cross addiction following weight loss surgery because people don't deal with the issues that caused them to use food as comfort. And so then they spiral into these cross addictions. They either gain weight back, many of them, or they spiral into cross addictions, which is what happened to me. I went from addiction to addiction to addiction until finally I lost everything and went into treatment. And once I was able to finally just disclose that trauma from my childhood and begin healing, that's when I was able to finally become who I was meant to be in the first place.
If you don't deal with the root issue, the weeds keep coming back, and they may be different weeds, but they're weeds. And we got to deal with what is causing them to grow, what is causing the behavior rather than the behavior itself, which of course is something we talk about in Binge Free Babes, which we have a couple of babes with us today on Instagram. You mentioned trauma. And let's talk about trauma because, I should actually mention that if you all want to join us, anyone who wants to join us, please give us a call, 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815. please call and ask Kelly or me anything, or if you have a comment, we would love to hear that. We would love to hear what is weighing on you and what is eating at you, because as you know, the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating, the real problem is not food. It's what's going on inside. It's that root. So you mentioned trauma, and I find that a lot of people have a misperception about what trauma is. Can you speak to that?
Oh, yes. You know, my specific trauma was that I was sexually abused for many years of my childhood. And that trauma for me was something that I held cloaked in shame, that just the silence and the secrets of all of that just destroyed me. It destroyed my worth. And so I speak about that everywhere I go. But what I'm always surprised by is people say, oh, well, Kelly, I didn't go through what you went through. There are so many different kinds of trauma. And trauma is very subjective. It's what hurts you. It doesn't have to be sexual abuse. It can be physical abuse. It could be neglect. It can be emotional abuse. It can be anything can be traumatic. It depends on how the individual perceives what happened. And what hurts me might not hurt you. What brings you to your knees, I might be like, oh, that's a walk in the park for me, because we're all different. And so trauma is different for each one of us. But I think that almost anyone, if you have gotten through life and you have no trauma that you've ever experienced, that's just, I think most people you dig in, you can find some trauma there.
Yeah, there's big T trauma, which is what you experienced. Ongoing sexual abuse is significant big T trauma. Then there's and that's like, you know, a big steak knife through your heart. And then there's the little T trauma, which is like a thousand small cuts. Well, one cut doesn't hurt that much. Two cuts, yeah, you can deal with that. A thousand cuts are super painful. And those thousand cuts might be the cutting remarks people make, the cutting you down, the not being seen, the things like that. And the result, of course, is, you know, you got to cope in some way. And whether it's turning to food or something else, you know, you're just trying to deal with that trauma. You're trying to cope. And I think you really articulate that beautifully in your book, where, yes, you talk about your experience of shame, but which is in itself traumatic, but then recognizing that you have to deal with what's eating at you and not just what you're eating.
Yeah, that shame will destroy you. I mean, it will just choke the life and the hope out of people to be able to become their best and to get past the things that have held them back. In my situation, no matter how hard I ran, no matter how fast I ran, I couldn't outrun myself. And that's why I always think it's important to say I was a counselor for 28 years and still I couldn't speak my shame. And so, you know, people think, oh, well, certain types of people, they couldn't possibly have shame. They couldn't possibly have trauma. And every one of us can have trauma and we can hide it, especially as a victim of abuse. We become excellent secret keepers. And so it's very easy to put up a facade of this is who I want the world to think I am, when behind the scenes, we're actually dying inside. And that was the case for me.
Last week on the show, I did this whole episode about how the characters from The Wizard of Oz have a lot to show us about how we can understand ourselves and our relationships with others. And what you just said was like the Wizard of Oz thought he had to project a certain image, a way of being, and that was the only way that he would be respected and liked. And the reality is that, you know, the guy behind the curtain was perfectly fine. He just didn't think so.
Yeah. And it really doesn't matter how much anybody else likes us. I mean, that's what my person that I talk about in the book, The Homecoming Queen of Crazy Town, is about. All the things we do to try to gain acceptance, all the things we do to try to be enough. And ultimately, it's only within us. You can have everything that people think someone who's enough would have, but if you don't have it inside at your core, you're still going to be haunted and doing all kinds of things behind the scenes to try to adjust and adapt for that.
So what are some of the things that, come to mind as far as your journey? Like what is enoughness? And I mean, this is something we actually talked about in the Binge Free Babes program is, well, I'm not enough. I'm not good enough. Well, what's going to make you enough? Well, when I lose weight. No, when you lose weight, you'll actually just be smaller. You'll be thinner. That's the extent of it. You won't feel enough because losing weight doesn't give you a greater sense of self. So, you know, what about that enoughness in your experience?
Yeah. And I think the thing is losing weight initially feels like it's enough because you have that honeymoon period where you're like, oh my goodness, look at all the attention I'm getting. Look how great I feel. Everything seems perfect. But then within a few months, all those old things start creeping back in. And so learning what makes you enough, what makes you say, when you look in the mirror, I'm okay. I'm okay. And if this person doesn't like me, I'm okay. And if this person isn't saying what I want to hear, I'm still okay. And, you know, for me, a big thing for me that I realized when I no longer needed to have the last word, I knew that I had really made a lot of progress because it didn't matter what anyone else thought, what they said, what they did. I knew in my heart and soul who I was and what my truth was, and that was enough for me.
Yeah, enough for you is enough, mm-hmm. because otherwise we're just pulled around by the winds of our environment. This person likes us, we feel good. This person doesn't like us, we feel bad. And that's just no way to live. You got to find it within.
Yeah.
And recognize how you came to believe you weren't enough in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Right. You can't, there's no way to get something back when you don't know how you lost it. You know, and for people who suffer any type of trauma in their childhood, a lot of times it was never there. So it was never built on. But, you know, Thoreau has a quote where he says, it's okay if your castles are in the air, you know, now put foundations under them. And we can do that. We can build a foundation and we can replace those fractured foundations that we had from things we went through in our childhood.
So if someone is listening and they're thinking, well, that sounds good, but what do I do first? Mm-hmm. What's the first step? How do I get there? What would you say to that person?
I'd say the very first step for me was I had to own my truth. I had to be able to say, this is what hurt me. You know, I always talk about the cellar of my soul. And you know, what do we keep in a cellar? All the things that we really never want to see again. The thing, it's kind of dark and dreary. And I had to be willing to just speak the truth of what I had been through, as ugly as it was. I had to be willing to clean all of that out. And it was something I had, you know, escaped doing for 40 years. And to do that was very difficult. And I know I shared with you, I talk about it in my book, that when I first went to treatment, I had no intention of talking about the abuse I went through. And it took them a while to get it out of me. You know, I had a very, very smart therapist who led the team, and she suspected what was going on with me, but I had a lot of great walls, and also being a counselor, I knew what they were looking for. So, but being able to say, this is what happened. And it was a very painful day for me. I remember that day when they were trying to get me. What they did was set a little doll, like a child-sized doll in a chair in front of me, and told me that they wanted me to say what I would say to myself at that age. And literally, I couldn't do it. And I sat there for hours not speaking, and they were perfectly willing to sit and wait me out. And it just kept going and going, and them saying, you know, this could happen to you if you don't comply with treatment. That could happen to you if you don't comply with treatment. And I said, I don't care. Like, I literally couldn't speak. I couldn't do it. And eventually it just broke me down. And I did that. And when I was finally able to release that, when I was finally able to reveal that in therapy, in treatment, then that's when I began. Because we can't heal what we don't acknowledge.
So true. We cannot heal what we don't acknowledge. I want to invite people to join the show. If you have any question for Kelly or for me, if you have any comment or you want to share your experience, the number is 323-203-0815. You know, one thing that you talk about a lot is shame. And one thing I talk about a lot is shame. Shame is the sense that there's something wrong with you. And as opposed to guilt, guilt is, oh, I ate too many cookies. Oh, shouldn't have done that. Not so good for me. I won't eat so many cookies tomorrow. Shame is, oh, I ate all those cookies. There's something wrong with me. There's something wrong with me. And then that causes us to create a false self. We create a facade that we show the world, Wizard of Oz. And we have to keep a part of ourselves away from the world, which means that we can't be with ourselves because we think there's something just wrong with us for being. Talk about how you challenged your own shame, and what you say to yourself now that's different than what you would say to yourself before.
Yeah. You know, I think it's important that when I think of shame, I always think of shame's comrade, which is silence. And, you know, the two just go together because what we keep secret in the dark, they're perfect partners. And so learning to be able to speak what I was feeling was something that was very, very incredibly difficult for me. And so destroying that shame, I realized couldn't happen until I was willing to be vulnerable. And I always get questions about this because other victims have said, I'll never let myself be vulnerable. But you can't find genuine connection with other human beings if you don't learn to have a healthy level of vulnerability. And so for me, every step I took trying to allow myself to be a little vulnerable, no matter how terrifying it was, ate away at some of that shame. And being able to stop the thoughts and of, oh, you know, I would always think everybody's mad at me. Someone's mad at me. They're mad at me for this. They're mad at me for that. And I would literally bend myself just in half trying to keep everybody happy, imagining all the different people who could be mad at me when there was never a reason for them to be mad at me in the first place. And that's shame. You know, that's that if anybody finds out who I really am, they're not going to like me. So then we live that way, thinking everybody, like we're always trying to prove we're enough so people don't find out our secret and our shame. And so being able to, I had a very small circle of friends coming out of treatment that I could honestly say to them, are you upset with me for something? That was incredibly difficult for me to do. I would just always run around behind the scenes and try to do everything to manipulate so no one would be upset with me. And that was exhausting. So being able to say, are you upset with me? And my friends at the time were very aware how difficult it was for me. So I had several little behavioral steps that I had to put into practice every day to begin to say, I'm not the way I'm thinking. You know, in Binge Free Babes, we talked about that voice that's in our head, those negative thoughts of, oh, you're not enough. You're stupid. Why'd you say that? And, you know, we shared with the ladies to say, bitch, please, like, give me a break to our negative voices, to be able to silence those because they've been a pattern in our mind for so long. And to be able to go back at those thoughts and say, that's not accurate. That's not an accurate thought that I'm having. And to have really healthy people in my life who could mirror that with me, that when I could say, I'm feeling this way, and they would say, you know, that's not realistic, right? And because it's such a pattern after 40 years, those are very powerful thought patterns.
And then eventually getting to the point of, okay, what if someone is upset with you?
Yeah.
Is that the end of the world? And, you know, what did it mean to you if that someone was upset with you? What did it mean about you? And to challenge those ideas. We all get upset with each other at times.
Yeah. And for me, if someone didn't like me or someone was upset with me, for me, that was such a trigger for rejection and took me right back to that, I'm not enough. If I was enough, you wouldn't reject me. And so I had to learn to be able to say, you know what? Even if you reject me, I'm going to be okay. You know, I dated a man. I was involved with the man for 5 years. I bought him a car. And I never once said, are we committed? Ever. Because I was terrified that he might say no. So rather than have that conversation, like, what exactly is it that we have? I just did nothing because it was terrifying for me to do it. Today, thank God, I mean, I'm perfectly fine with having that conversation with somebody. And if someone said no, I'm going to be okay. My life doesn't like rise or fall on what someone else thinks.
And when you are able to have attachments that feel secure, that are fulfilling and rewarding, you know, then you don't use food for the purpose of dealing with the anxiety or filling the void of loneliness or any of the other reasons that we use food to resolve emotional conflicts.
Yeah.
I just want to say, I don't know, normally I am getting calls. I'm not sure if Ronan is here today or if the callers are just not getting through. If you are on Instagram, please feel free to just drop a comment in the Instagram. I've got Instagram up as well. So if you have any comments, just drop them in the Instagram comments and we will answer we will address your comment or answer your question. So food is so related to shame because the way that we talk to ourselves is so mean that often we use food just to get away from our own mean voice. When we change the dialogue, we don't need to escape ourselves. We can actually use our voices to reassure and comfort and acknowledge ourselves.
Yeah, literally in the past, I can remember being upset about something and I would be driving home. And this is after losing the weight. I would be driving home and I would just think, in my mind, I'd just be thinking what I was going to go home and eat. I'm going to get this or I'm going to get that. Because it was still in my mind that this is how I deal with it. This is how I make this better. And to be able to learn that there are other things that can make me feel better besides all of this sugar. Or all of this, you know, I'm not perfect. I always say, you know, today I eat what I want to eat, but I know how to do it in a way that it stays healthy for me. And yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with eating sugar. We've demonized sugar. Yeah. You know, people say, oh, it's more addictive than heroin. And then they'll talk about some study in which rats went for sugar rather than heroin. Well, first of all, those rats were often starved before as part of the study. And secondly, rats are not motivated by heroin. Rats do not want to get high. Rats are motivated by survival. Sugar is food. Food is survival. So of course the rats always go to sugar. And when people talk about their sugar addiction, they're usually not like taking spoonfuls of sugar and you know, eating it. They're usually eating some kind of food that has sugar in it. And that food can say a lot about, you know, what's going on within, what our needs are. If we don't learn how to be kind to ourselves, we're going to use the sweetness of something made with sugar as a substitute.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I did it my entire life. And, you know, and I think as a society, we use food to celebrate. We use food to mourn, you know, who's going to take food when someone passes away. And food is just everything. It's the core of everything. And learning to have a friendly relationship with it changed my life because I didn't before. It was nothing but comfort for me. And so learning to navigate that, what I learned really quick was deprivation didn't work for me, not at all. And so I had to learn to be able to have just a balance of things. And then food wasn't the issue. But like I said, I wish I could have healed prior to destroying my life and, you know, playing like, you know, hip hop with the addictions, you know, hop from one to the next, but it happened. And if it didn't happen, I wouldn't have told my story. So.
And here we are, right? And you tell your story and you help by telling your story of survival and hope. That's how people learn to have hope. You know, if it's, hey, I'm perfect and I've really got this life thing going down, like I'm good with it. You're not going to inspire anyone. You're just going to make other people feel bad because they don't have this life thing going like, you know, down. So that's why just your, you know, your authenticity and your willingness to be vulnerable and real and all of that is so, it's so helpful to people. That's what's so inspiring.
I think that I have was such a good role player in the past because I had to be. You know, when you're a victim of regular abuse on a daily basis, you learn to project that everything's okay because you're terrified of anybody finding out because of the threats and the intimidation and everything else that goes along with sexual abuse many times. And so you become a really, really good role player that everything's okay in your life. And that's not something you abandon when the trauma ends. And I think that's the thing that people don't always grasp is that just because the abuse ends doesn't mean the trauma ended with it. And we take that trauma. You know, I always say trauma sits at the control room of our soul, just quietly, quietly dictating all of our life's calamities. And unhealed trauma does. And that's, I mean, I believe that trauma is the real gateway drug. I just, you know, that's what gets people reaching for something. What can I possibly reach for to feel better?
A couple of years ago, co-edited a book called Beyond the Primal Addiction with my mentor, Dr. Salman Akhtar. And it's all, we talked about all these different addictions, but the core of all these addictions, whether it was food, which is not really an addiction. If we're going to use it, it's more like an eating addiction. Whether it's food or shopping or gambling or you know, being on the internet or sex or what, you know, whatever it is, at the core, it's a way of coping. It's just a way of coping that also hurts us, of course.
And I think people have to learn to be very, like you always talk about in Binge Free Babes, very compassionate with themselves, because it's easy to look back and say, wow, what a horrible person I was that I did this or I did that. And at the time we were doing what we could do to survive. And an unhealthy person, a person who was very much in pain, is trying to survive and navigate the best way they know how with survival skills from childhood that turn into very unhealthy coping mechanisms as an adult. And so being able to say, I'm not my behaviors, I'm not my mistakes, and I'm moving forward into a new place is so powerful for people. So many people have so much shame, even though they've gotten sober or they've healed, they have a lot of shame about the past, and we have to be able to walk away from that completely cognizant of what happened, but not carrying it with us. You know, don't drag all of your garbage with you everywhere you go.
Yes. And to do that, just circling back also to what you said, that the coping mechanism doesn't end when the trauma ends. Mm-hmm. We don't get past what happens to us. We just bring it into our present. Mm-hmm. And it's like an open wound in our soul that we continue to experience even when we're no longer in the original, you know, painful situation. If you have a judgmental, critical parent, you might find a judgmental, critical boyfriend or girlfriend, spouse, unconsciously hoping to replay with them and have a different outcome than you had with the original judgmental person. When we heal the original wounds, then we can have different experiences with others, so that it goes from like an open wound, just like in reality with wounds, open wound to scabbing over, which hurts less when you touch that place, to a scar, which is the place that used to hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. So true. I mean, as a child, I learned really quick, if I went to school and I said I was sick, they would call my mom to come and get me. And so when my mom came to get me, she took me back to work with her because I was too little to stay home alone. So what that did was allow me not to be home alone after school with my teenage brothers who were raping me. So I developed that manipulating and that skill of lying to protect myself. So then when I became an adult, that didn't just all of a sudden stop. You know, if I was afraid something was going to hurt me, I would try to manipulate behind the scenes so that it wouldn't. And, you know, trying to get, okay, if I do this, then that, if I keep everybody happy, you know, if someone would say to me, oh, I don't like her and this and this and this, I'd be like, oh yeah, I disagree with everybody. And even though whether I agreed with them or not, because I couldn't deal with that conflict and I was always trying to keep all the pieces in a good place that I could not be hurt by it on any level, and which was just silencing my truth. So, you know, I carried those with me. Like when I went away to college at 18, my trauma didn't end. I took those survival skills with me and learning that I didn't have to do that, that life was going to be okay. And again, that's why I always say I worked in this field for 28 years. People think that it's just, oh, well, you would know that. No, these are very deeply ingrained behaviors that you utilize to escape the most difficult kinds of trauma. And there's actually pathways in your brain that were developed with that. And so learning to, okay, you don't have to do all of this. And you're allowed to say to somebody that you disagree with what they think. And it's not going to be the end of the world. And if it is the end of the world to that person, like, okay, next. I mean, it's not the end of the world.
Yes, we learn to, especially girls, women, we learn to people please. And in fact, one of the responses of trauma, it's fight, flight, freeze. And the new one people are talking about is fawn, F-A-W-N, fawning, which is really people pleasing. Dealing with traumatic emotional situations by making sure you take care of everybody except yourself, of course. You take care of everybody, you empty yourself out, and then food takes care of you, which I think was your story too.
Yes, 100% I did that. Absolutely. I would be a freeze / fawn for sure. I mean, because that's what I always tried to do. Even people I didn't like, I would go above and beyond and, you know, what can I do to possibly try to get them to like me? Because at the core of it, I thought I was worthless. I was so deeply broken that I thought the only way people will like me is if I'm buying something for them or doing something for them. And, you know, that's a hard thing to look in the mirror and say, that's really what I thought for all those years. You know, I had to always buy the best presents, the most presents, like, you know, whatever it was, I had to do it above and beyond. Because I thought that's the only way I had worth.
Yeah. And when we devalue ourselves, we're so busy taking care of everybody else, we deplete ourselves. And then food, which represents people, becomes something we can literally take in. If you're spending all your energy taking care of everybody and making sure that everybody is good and fine and happy and well, and not irritating them or annoying them or doing anything that might cause them to be upset with you, it's like you're playing a role, and it's exhausting and depleting, and then people don't take care of you, right?
And then you just are a magnet for the people who want to take advantage of those situations, because that's what always happens. Those kind of people can find you with a fine-tuned radar. And so they're the kind of people who know, oh, she needs to give to feel good. And so I'm going to take everything I can from her. And as soon as you say, well, I can't give, then they're angry. And then you do everything you can to still give because you don't want them to be angry. And so you just become this person that those type of people circle around looking for. And so it's just this terrible cycle that's really difficult to break, but you can break it. I mean, there are so many people in my past that I just think it's too bad you don't know the person I am today, because, you know, I mean, it's a beautiful life, and it's a wonderful world to live in when you just have the peace and knowing like that I'm going to be okay.
Yeah. When you can be there for yourself and instead of being in these relationships where you give and they take, where you can have mutuality in relationships and you can also be there for yourself, reassure yourself, comfort yourself, take your own side instead of say mean things to yourself that makes you want to, you know, ditch that voice and dive into a gallon of ice cream. You know, when you're actually there being sweet to yourself, you don't need that ice cream or whatever.
Yeah.
It's really so much about our relationship with food really is so much about our relationship with ourselves.
It really is. I mean, being able to identify that self-love and, you know, for me, my faith and that I'm created in the image of God was a lot for me. It was part of my journey as well. And I know everybody has their own journey that they walk and how they find that. But whatever it is for you, being able to zero in on this is where the core of who I am exists, and feeding that and not feeding the cognitive distortions and the negative, all the different things that you've developed along the way, because eventually they start to lessen once you're able to go through that. And for me, in a day, I would do it hundreds of times. I mean, I can't remember how many thoughts we have in a day. It's in the thousands and thousands. And so when people say, oh, well, you just have to think positive, it takes a lot more effort than just trying to think positive. I mean, I had a lot of behavioral things I had to do to follow that up. And literally, I would just stop and ask myself, do I want to be healthy? Do I want to be healthy? Do I want to be able to figure this out? Do I always want to live with this fear that nothing I do is enough?
And thanks for bringing up this idea of you've got to think positively. That is so dismissive, right? Because if it's just, oh, think positively, just think a different way. Well, first of all, if you could, you would. But it also dismisses why you feel the way you feel in the first place. And that's why, you know, again, something that I talk about a lot and teach and talk about it a lot in Bintry Babes is you've got to validate and acknowledge the yucky stuff. You've got to validate and acknowledge the pain and the rage and the disappointment and the whatever it is that you don't want to feel. You've got to recognize it, respond to it, express it, and then give yourself some positivity. Mm-hmm. And that if you, you fail a big exam, you fail the bar, let's say someone fails the bar. If you just say, oh, it's okay, you're going to do better next time. It's all right. No worries. Like you've got this. Next time you'll get it. Well, what about all the disappointment you have for not passing the bar? You've got to be like, yeah, that sucks. You didn't pass the bar. That's devastating. You must feel terrible. You must be crushed. You must be so upset. Acknowledging. Yeah. And you know what? You're going to do it next time. Wait, big difference.
Yeah. I think that most people I've ever spoken to who were in a lot of pain wanted to hear, not you should, but the two words they want to hear are me too. Like people want to know that you've been in a dark place. You've gone through something painful. And even if it's just a very generalized thing of, you know, you may not know my story, but I've been there. And so like, I understand the pain you're in. You know, people don't usually want advice. They just want someone who can tell them, you know, I've gotten through something difficult too.
The other thing I wanted to ask you was on the question of forgiveness, because many people have been hurt as you were by those you loved and who were supposed to be different towards you. You know, instead of a loving big brother, you had an abuser, or, you know, plural. What is your position on forgiveness?
Yeah, my position on forgiveness is that it's everything. I think it's the key to happiness. And I think that people get forgiveness confused with, I want you in my life again. Because for me, forgiveness is letting all that anger and rage and bitterness out of me, and forgiving other people sets me free. So it's not about, oh, you didn't hurt me. You didn't do anything wrong to me. It's just about I'm releasing myself from this cage that I have myself in with anger and bitterness and hate. And being able to say, I forgive that person doesn't mean they've earned it or they deserve it, anything like that. And for me, it goes back to my faith that if I want to be forgiven, then I need to forgive other people. But in saying that, again, for me, forgiveness, yes, but like access denied. It doesn't mean that I want someone in my life. It doesn't mean I want to have a relationship with that person. It just means I'm not carrying that hate around in my heart.
Yeah. Yes, that's a really important distinction because a lot of times people assume like, okay, you're forgiven. Now it's, you know, the slate is clean and let's just carry on, which is impossible in many situations.
Yeah.
The way you're describing forgiveness, it's more like a, for me, it's because my thought about forgiveness is that some things are unforgivable. Mm-hmm. Some people just don't get to be forgiven, but that's the kind of forgiveness that you're talking about where you get a pass. Like some things are just not forgivable, but you have to release the idea that you had anything to do with what happened, that you will, you know, it happened because of you, and really just say it, put a boundary and say, you will not be in my life, whether in reality or in my head, because there's the people who are abusive to some extent or another that exist in reality. And then there are the people that we've sort of internalized. And that's when we talk to ourselves, like, you didn't do well enough. You're stupid and you're this and you're that. That's the abusers in our head, and we've got to cast them out.
Yeah. I think Oprah, I might completely butcher this quote, but I'm pretty sure that she has a quote about forgiveness where she said, forgiveness is giving up on the idea that the past could have happened any differently. You know, that it is what it is, and I'm not carrying that with me. You know, I used to always say, oh, I've got baggage, like, but it's Louis Vuitton and everybody wants some, you know, like, and that was so ridiculous. I mean, that's such a ridiculous thing to say because really nobody wants to deal with your garbage. They don't. And like, you can cover it up, you can dress it up, you can make it be pretty, but eventually it's going to do what garbage does and it's going to stink. And people are going to be like, there's something not good going on here. And eventually they're going to want to get away from it. And so, you know, when I do speak, I have these pink garbage bags and I always take one full of like tissue paper or whatever. And I put little pink ribbons on it and I just set it over like on the side of the stage where kind of no one's looking. And at the end I go over and I'm like, this has been with me all the time, but I dressed it up. I made it pretty. And no one was like, what's this big garbage bag doing over here? Because like we carry it with us wherever we go, if we don't process it and work through it. And you don't need to drag all your garbage with you into new relationships. Nobody wants to be drugged through the swampland of your pain. And that's why you need to heal.
Even Sigmund Freud said, what is not worked through is repeated. Mm. And we, so that's why we go from a place where we're not celebrated, leave our house, go into the world, find people who don't celebrate us and try to convert them into people who celebrate us.
Oh my God. I was such a
repetition.
Yes. I was trying to convert everybody.
And, or we find people who are actually available and kind and loving and we go, ugh, you're too nice.
Yes. The path of my life is littered with like amazing quality men that I was like, no, like you're like a brother, you know? I mean, I just couldn't deal with normalcy. I couldn't deal with that. So all of the great people who came into my life, I discarded left and right because it wasn't what I was accustomed to.
Plus for you, like a brother had other implications.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's kind of a bad way. But I mean, like all of the, I had a lot of wonderful people who I just had no interest in because I had no idea how to deal with somebody who wasn't a gigantic mess.
Right. We want to take the person who we can't have and turn them into someone who is loving and generous and available. Mm-hmm. And if someone who comes along who is loving and generous available, we don't want them because we want the conversion. Why? Because that we think will heal our original pain, our original relationship, our original, the dynamics that create the what we're dealing with now. And when you deal with that original stuff, then the nice person comes along and you say, hey, let's be together, or let's be friends, or let's whatever, that you can let them in your life in a different way.
Yeah, for sure. I see Samantha says in her experience, choosing to forgive people has resulted in her freedom from a life of bitterness or hatred. And that's exactly how I feel about that too. You know, I always say that I heard this a long time ago, that when we don't forgive somebody, it's like having a rat in our house, but we drink the poison. You know, we're the ones who are sick from it. We're the ones who are walking around with the anger and the rage and the bitterness and the hate in our heart. And forgiving that lets us get rid of that and be free from it. And so I completely agree with that.
Yeah, it's like release. It's releasing. Mm-hmm. No,
it's
not going to poison me. But nor is it okay that you did. I think the reason that some people, including maybe me, have an issue with the word forgiveness, which it seems to imply, like, okay, you're like you got to reset, you got to redo, you got to reset. Sometimes it's hard to believe, forgive. If this happens, maybe at least let's forgive ourselves for not forgiving for now. Yes, that's a good way to put it.
And I'd say too, forgiveness is a crockpot thing, not a microwave thing. It takes steps, and there's times all the time in a given day where I'll be like, whoa, I thought it was out of me. And then for me, like I said, what works for me is I have to pray and say, you know, God, I need some help on this. Like, I thought I was through it, and today I woke up and I'm really, really full of rage and anger, and, you know, towards my brothers and the things that happened, and you know, one of them is dead. So I have to, like, consistently do that and keep doing that, because it's incremental. People just think immediately one day they can say, I forgive. And for me, that's not the way it worked. It was a small, gradual process, and something that still from day to day, I'll be like, oh, you know, like, careful, your trauma is showing. I mean, I have to just, you know, be able to reprocess it and realize that will be the truth for the rest of my life. When something steps on one of those triggers, I have to be able to deal with it appropriately, acknowledge it, and move forward. And it doesn't stop me in my tracks the way it used to. I could be triggered in the past and it could take a week. It could spiral into something really bad, and it's not that way anymore. And that's just what I want people to know. You can get to that point where it's just like a little 30-second conversation with yourself. Okay, this is what's happening. I realize it. I acknowledge it. I know what to do. I'm moving forward.
I love how you put it. It's a crock pot thing, not a microwave thing.
Yeah. That's from my mommy. She's in the book. Okay. It just doesn't happen overnight.
And everything is a process, including our relationship. I forgave someone and they just did it over and over again. How do you forgive them again? Well, I think that goes to the difference between forgiveness and in your heart versus giving them access to your life. Like, it's about boundaries. Kelly, what are your thoughts on that?
Like, when I speak, I have this PowerPoint presentation where I have, like, apology accepted, and the very next slide is access denied. You know, because if someone does something, then let's say there's someone who's still in your life for whatever reason that you can't be eliminated from their life. People have a lot of situations going on, but like, they can only continue to hurt you if you allow it. In most situations, I mean, I'm not talking about children or whatever, but if someone keeps doing the same thing to you and, you know, they're still in your life and still able to do it again, then I think you have to look at what changes can I make? Because at this point, you know, I think that people make mistakes and that can happen. And, you know, but then eventually it's a choice. If they keep doing something to you over and over, that's a choice.
Yes, it's about boundaries. Forgiveness does not mean letting someone hurt you again. Exactly. Yes. That forgiveness is really about you and how you feel and not letting the hatred be toxic to you and resentment, but to be able to forgive, but not forget and not give, like Kelly said, access denied. Because as Maya Angelou said, when someone shows you who they are the first time, believe them. And that goes for people who show up as really good people. And it also means when people show you who they are and they act in a way that is hurtful, that's who they are. It wasn't an anomaly. They weren't having a bad day. It's not because of their childhood. They made a choice and you get to protect yourself from them.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, she also has a great quote that she says, be careful of someone telling you that they love you when they don't love themselves. And she said there's something about a proverb, an African proverb, I think it was, that said, be suspicious when a man with no shirt offers you the shirt off his back. Something like that. I mean, it's much better said than I just said it. But you get the point, you know, that when you willingly keep going back to someone who hurts you, then they expect that you'll always forgive and acquiesce and you'll get to go forward and they're not going to change their behaviors.
And we're actually over time, but I just want to address this. People do change. People don't change unless they make a concerted effort to change and to face why they do what they do, why they did what they did to you, how they are in the world. People don't just change because they tell you they're going to change. They change only with a great deal of work. Kelly, I'll give you the last word on this.
Say it louder for the people in the back. I mean, because for me, something, the absolute unthinkable had to happen for me to change. Like, I mean, we're talking about catastrophic, lose your home, lose your cars, lose everything you have, every person you love. Only then is when I went into treatment and I didn't get any of those things or people back. I had to move forward. So it has to be something really, really big, something huge to make people change. People will put more effort into making you believe they'll change than they ever will put into changing. And I think eventually you have to ask yourself, why does this person keep doing this to me, but why do I allow it?
Perfectly said. And an apology is the beginning of a conversation, not the end of it.
Yeah. And I'm just going to say, like, I completely get it because, you know, I was the forgiver of the ones who didn't want to be forgiven, you know, the lover of the remorseless. I mean, I was involved with people who hurt me repeatedly over and over and over, and I would end up apologizing to them for what they did to me. And so I get it. I know how hard it is to let go of somebody when you're kind of caught up in one of those types of situations. I know how hard it is.
Yeah. Well, Kelly, this time has gone so quickly. I feel like you definitely need to come back because we have a lot more to say and people, and this has gotten a lot of people are talking about it on Instagram. You know, forgiveness is quite the topic. We'll have to come back and talk about forgiveness and other things. Tell everybody where they can find you.
Yeah. Well, on Instagram, I'm at Gunter Kelly, which I'm sure it's underneath this or will be eventually. My website is kellygunter.com. And I did see someone ask, somebody said they've been trying to call in, but no answer.
I think Ronan is, there's something, I think there's an issue with Ronan today. So next time we'll make sure that everything is good and you'll be able to call in. And you can always leave me the questions for Kelly, but we'll have her back soon.
I saw someone ask when my book's coming out. Hopefully it will be out in October. October is the day that it should be out there. So it's definitely, you know, Nina, you're one of the reasons I said, I don't know if I should share all these crazy stories of everything I did prior to treatment. And you were like, you have to. And I said, woo. But so, yeah, it's definitely going to work.
Well, wonderful. It's been wonderful having you. I will be posting links to, so you can find Kelly on Instagram and also on YouTube. So thank you again. It's always so much fun to have you on the show. And if anyone is interested in the Binge Free Babes, which we're there once a week with 30 or 40 other women talking about these things and helping them through, the website is bingefreebabes.com. And join us. You can join us weekly. All right, everyone. Thank you again, Kelly. Thank you. And I'll see you soon.
Okay.
Bye for now.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.